this might be career suicide, I don't know, but I feel as if I'm going to tell you something nobody else knows.
Connect with us on the Emotion Wellness Podcast for a transformative journey of human connection. Witness personal stories, improve your mental health education, and acquire valuable resources for optimizing your well-being. Delve into the raw and courageous narratives of individuals who have thrived through adversity, gained clarity amongst the ashes, and emerged with an unshakable mindset. Available on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And visit emotionwellness.com for more information.
Dr. Rob Kelly, I want to say thanks for joining us today and being here with me. You and I have a bit of a history together that I cherish and means a lot to me. So I want to thank you for coming on the show today.
No, awesome, man. Yeah, we do have a little bit of a past. It's been an awesome ride, man, to watch you grow. But so honored to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, you are. This is the second time I've done a show, so this is all new to me. And I think it's important for anyone listening to know that this is not something that I really wanted to do. I wanted to do it as far as putting on a podcast, but I didn't want to do it because I was terrified.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of imposter syndrome, a lot of self-sabotaging behaviors. And I was quite malcontent for most of my life. Moved to Texas and that didn't really change much. And this is why I asked you to come on the show. One, I want to say thank you. I think a lot of people see you. You have a big presence. You do amazing work and you're kind of in a lot of different things. I have the benefit of having had some pretty intense and intimate moments with you. And I consider you responsible in part. You're a piece of the pie chart that helped me to get to where this is here. This, we would not be having this conversation at this table in this building if I did not sit in your office and you did not do what you did with me. And so I really just wanted to say thank you. You know, a lot of people don't understand how much you give. And I'm somebody who wants to give credit where credit's due. Those of you that are listening, this man worked with me free of charge. Didn't charge me a penny. First of all, I couldn't afford him anyway, but and I still can't. But hopefully one day that changes. But yeah, you worked with me for free. And you, in one brief moment of the work, you changed my entire perspective, and your work with neuroscience and pathways and the things that you talk about are absolutely, I've embarked on that study myself, but from a personal experience, you changed my life almost in a moment. It doesn't take years. Like, you did it like that.
Yeah.
And I'll get into that later, but my intro today with you is that I have gratitude. I'm all about trying to connect today with people who mean a lot to me. I'm leaving behind I had Frank, you know, you and I both know Frank. I had Frank on the other day, and it's about vibe and frequency. And if the frequency and the vibe is not supportive and it's weighing me down, I move forward and I don't take it personal anymore. Mm-hmm. You're somebody who raises my frequency, and I'm so looking forward to having a conversation with you today. So
thank you, man. That means a lot. It's crazy because not a lot of people tell me that, because they think you already know. Like, we don't know. So hearing that is kind of, having a little 1% to do with where you are today is kind of, it makes my life. Every time I look, I'm always like, wow. So thank you for that.
Yeah. So your journey to being in this chair today, where did it start for you, the man that you are today in the profession? Like, where did you realize this is what I want to do?
And I'm going to. It was only when I came to America. It was only about 18 years ago I arrived, and I dabbled. I was a licensed psychologist for many, many years. And then I came out the industry complete. I was so disillusioned with everything that goes on in the industry where, you know, I just didn't agree with it. And I was getting shot down by the medical fraternity saying, this is just BS, you know, this is not real, you're making this stuff up. And about 9 years ago, when I met my wife, somebody called me from a treatment center, a big treatment center, and said, Dr. Kelly, and it's the first time I've heard that in like a year. Anyway, the opposition was, he wants to work with his son, he's going to offer me this amount of money. I was probably earning $600 a week. Like 9 years ago, that's all I was earning, driving a truck for a pest control company.
Wow.
Doing the sales. I did love it. It was pretty good out with people. But I got that phone call, and that's where it changed. And I think, like I've told you in the past, before that, when I first arrived, I was listening to the way other people were doing it. I was listening to their comments and I was following that, thinking that was the truth. 9 years ago, when I came back into the industry, it's not the truth. And it's great to meet up with some of them guys like you when I first met you. That was, oh my goodness, this backs up what I'm doing here. Mm-hmm. Because nobody was saying that. So when neuroplasticity came out, we were doing that a few years before that. Because we just didn't know what to call it. We knew you could change your life by an instant eye outside a liquor store once. So we delved into the science. We delved into trial and testing, everything. Richardson Hospital was sick of us there. We used a science lab there. We've been to the prison over here, the execution prison. And we just researched. So done a couple of papers for Harvard University's Psych Hospital, McLean Hospital, and various white papers for British government. And you know, I met George Bush over here, so I get to do some stuff with him. So yeah. You know, I think it was 9 years ago. And then as the years go on, you know, you meet people that really are interested in what you're doing and start healing. And then all of a sudden, you know, you're getting cards off these people on a daily basis, which reinforces, because I think, you know, like you said, a lot of people see me and go, oh yeah, he's doing what he's doing, that's awesome. But what they don't do is they don't see me. It's like behind this persona, it's like I used to go on podcasts and be loud and brash and curse and stuff, you know, but lately I've heavily gone back to university days when I'm using my knowledge, I'm using what I have, because I believe it's true. The research tells us it's true, and certain people in the science industry have confirmed it's true. So yeah, I know I'm on the right path. I kind of live in the dream, man, instead of dreaming, I live in today.
Yeah. And your road, I know this, I have the benefit of knowing you, but your road has been a lonely one as a professional. Mm. Is that accurate?
Oh, yeah, man. Trying not to get upset with that, but many years when it was lonely, you know? Like, nobody was agreeing with me. Everyone started to put me down. I was Facebook and, you know, it just... You know, you're not English, he's not a psychologist, you know, he's not living, all this stuff. You didn't have a childhood, he was never homeless. You know, these keyboard warriors, man. And I took notice of that. And the other thing that isolated me even more is I put on a lot of weight. I was 349 pounds, I think, when I decided to go on this journey just over a year ago. And the more I do that, the more I get out and now meet people. But I can't even count the amount of times I've cried myself to sleep thinking.
That's wrong. People don't get it. It's like they don't understand. I think I relate to it because I haven't accomplished the things that you've accomplished, but I do have a dream to do that in an industry that has been, it's both beautiful and tragic. You know what I mean? I think if you had talked to me a couple of years ago, we'd be both using the F word right now, talking about how angry. And it's like, there's this duality in the world. And my focus has been more on what's beautiful, what's happening, right? So like our connection, the support that you've given me at the center, like it's lifted me up. Because I tell you what, I came into a scene where there was some support, but there's a lot of fear out there. Yeah, there's a lot of, and I have a mentality, and I think you have the same one, where people who are in the industry that are providing the same service, it's this weird, and I'm curious about what you think about this, but it's a weird place to be, because they're both competitors and allies. It's like, I may not be a fit for a particular client and I need to know the resources that are out there, but I'm basically in effect supporting a technically a competitor.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with the ally piece. I have a harder time with the competition piece because I really want good for all. Like I'm just one of those idealists. And I think I suffer at the hands of that. Right. And, I'm curious what you think about that. Like, as far as like this competition, but they're both allies and competition.
You know, we used to be in that position about 8 years ago where we would work at treatment centers and we would refer to treatment centers and they end up relapsing and one of them died, and, you know, and people pointing fingers at me again. You know, anything to point Dr. Rob that he's wrong, well, you're going to do that. So it's disillusioning. What we do today is we do not refer out. The only people referring is this place here, Emotion, because we're all on the same page. But I'm in a place to do that today. You know, you say I've accomplished more than you. It's because I'm 62 and you're not. Mm. You know, by the time you get here, it's taken a long journey to be where I am and enjoy life.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, you know, allies, of course they are. You know, I work with about 3 treatment centers that are good. We very rarely send people to them, but they'll send people to us because, you know, my name's on this, just like your name's on this, you know. If I did refer or we did take a patient in, it's for the right reasons. You know, it's like, I'll guarantee to your family that we're going to do this, otherwise I'll refund your money. I feel, you can't do that. It's not unheard of. That's what we've been doing. We've not really refunded yet, but it's there. You know, I truly believe what we're doing. I truly believe that we're on the right path. You know, over the 25, 30 years even, maybe over 8,000 patients, I know I'm doing right. And now people are recognizing that. Even treatment centers are calling us up saying, hey, can we come down? And, you know, I'm lecturing to doctors in Dallas. I'm lecturing to universities about addiction and the neuroscience behind addiction. And now it's not really about addiction. It's like alcohol has 1% to do with alcoholism, that kind of stuff. So I'm in that path today where, well, first of all, I don't care anymore, guys. I mean, I don't mean to be horrible, but I don't care what you say about me. God bless you. I know this, man. If you're doing better than me or as good as me, we don't criticize others. It's the people that are trying to chase me. Today, I'm okay with that. You know, great. Go do it, man. If it makes you feel
good. What do you think? Because I really related to when you were talking about the pain of the comments online. And I think it's hard to admit sometimes because I like to see myself as like strong. I'm kind of known as the fit, you know, the movement guy or the exercise guy, but there's a component of strength in a mindset, and the background of being wounded opens us up, I think, and makes us susceptible to criticism and feedback.
Yeah.
And it's sad to say, but it's part of my story and I need to own it. Is like, I was hiding from the world.
Yes.
We're doing, I wouldn't do a podcast because I didn't want the comments.
You won't do Facebook.
Yeah.
Remember? Yeah.
And so what switched for you? Is it Father Time? Is it like, did something click?
I think when we researched and we got back by a few people going, hey, we know what you're doing. These papers are great. And then other people come on board, scientists went, wow, this is amazing. I think things started to change there. And of course, age. You know, the older you get, the more you kind of don't. But you know, if you comment something on Facebook, it used to destroy me. And my friends and everyone said, don't look at the Facebook comments.
Yeah.
But because I do so much in the background, here's me thinking, well, everyone's going to love me because I do this, you know, pro bono, free of charge, whatever it is, I do all this. So they're not going to criticize me. And oh, God, was I wrong?
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, it hurt. But today, you know, I don't know, man. It's just. That guy who said to me, if anyone's doing as good as you and better, he'll never get criticized by some, you know, somebody doing as good as you are. So
yeah.
I like to inspire them, but I don't write comments back. This is really important because I used to.
Yeah.
I'll come around and kill you and stuff like that. He's like, I don't do that anymore. For the past 2 or 3 years, I've come out the shouting and I've got more back into the scientific part where I come from and the psychology behind it all. And to do that at the level I do it now, you know, I can't be dressing in shorts and a pink shirt and screaming from the microphone because a lot of people don't like that. You just don't like it.
Yeah.
So this feels comfortable to me being the person I am today.
Yeah.
Definitely age. Without a doubt.
Well, I just want to say I've seen you over the last 2 years, the weight loss and the change and behind the scenes, like, you know, I was talking to Frank the other day at the podcast that we did, and I knew Frank prior to his heart transplant.
Yeah.
And so, and I had made a joke to him. I said, I'm surprised your heart lasted as long as it did because he was so anxious.
Yeah.
And the message I'm trying to convey to people is that I'm all about raw, authentic, real. I mean, it's like, let's just be real, right? And so that's why I'm attracted to guys like him. It's why I'm attracted to guys like you. And your energy is very different these days. Like, and I appreciate it because you're an example to me of like the growth and the process because there's some similarities, right? Like we both felt the wounds.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
I've had a lot of lonely nights and you really helped me when you made a comment. And I've talked to Casey about this a couple of times. You told me, you said, Jason, you're speaking a different language. Like you're in a system and it just can't hear you. Right. And one thing I know with the patients that I get to work with, the coaching clients I work with, the research that I've read and the stuff that's out there, the idea of the concept of being seen, man, is that powerful? You know what I mean? Like, and that's what I think you were able to do for me. You're able to say, yeah, like, I see you. I get it. And you shared with me your journey around the struggles. And it was like finding somebody. It's like when you're entering recovery and you think, man, I'm the only one who's fucked up my life on alcohol and drugs. No one understands. And then you jump into an entire room full of people who are talking about stuff that nobody talks about. It was so refreshing to hear like, oh my God, he really gets it. He really gets it. Cause it was like, I was, and my default setting is let's get angry and let, you know, I'm going to use my size or intimidation or, and when people back off and don't want to be a part of your circle, it's like, well, yeah, you created it, man. Like, you know, I have to take ownership over that.
Well, we attract what we think we're worth. So in that phase, early days, when the only way for me to get heard is to dress crazily and act crazily. And you know, get people hyped up into it, you know, because again, I was still speaking a different language 9 years ago. But the moment I met you, you remember the day we were going in that office and I was meeting the CEO and then you came in, sat down, and somebody else came in, sat down. And I was talking about neuroscience and you jumped straight in with that relatability. And I'm like, oh my
God. I was so hungry for it though. Yeah,
you was. And that's, you know, more people around me that say that, obviously they're more convinced. So, you know, show me your friends, I'll show you future. My life, when I met you, started to change more because it was no longer about, let's see what I can achieve. Because I kind of done it all, to be honest.
Yeah, you have, for real. And he's not just saying that, he's really done a lot. So
it's like when I saw you, it was like, I want Jason to be at this. I want him to get this and do it. And to watch that grow 2 years ago when we met, you know, it was just like watching your growth now. It's, I get enjoyment out of that. Because again, I'm not, you know, I'm old. That's the only reason why I've done a lot of things. But, you know, I have one thing that not a lot of people have today, and that is enough. I have enough. So when I see people like you going through to change the world like I did, to change the whole language around the neuroscience, the fitness, the eating, you know, all the stuff that you do here is just incredible. So I've stopped watching my journey now because, you know, I'm good. I'm happy. But I'm watching yours, man.
Yeah.
It really is. It's amazing.
I want to talk about that for a minute, and man. When you said the journey, it was like instantly brought back to, a lot of people don't know this, but, and people in my circle do, but a lot of people out there don't. You know, January of 22, 2 years ago, right? A little over 2 years ago. 18 years sober, 46 years old, literally calling a friend to say, hey, man, I don't have a place to be. And started on his floor. And I did not want to do what was necessary. Like, I want to be the guy, and there's this part of me, right? I want to be the guy that says, oh, I got this hardcore mindset and I'm warrior set, all this stuff, right, that you hear and it's promoted. And I think there's some people out there who are just like that, right? Yeah. And one thing I love, one of the guys I listen to a lot is Goggins, and the way he talks about how he was, that's the most attractive feature, right? Is like he's willing to share the dark stuff. And I was angry, miserable, and not, life was not fair, man. And like, I had no idea how much work it was going to take. Like, anyone who's gotten sober from drugs and alcohol know what it's like to be in early recovery. And honest to God, I would have traded it in that moment. Like, I don't want to do this. Yeah. I do not want to do this. You and I told you about my concept, and it was very different back then. It was a little bit smaller scale, and that's because I still didn't believe in myself. And there's two things I want to talk about with Dr. Rob. So one is, when you work with Dr. Rob and he says, do whatever it is, it doesn't matter. If it's like, get home, call me at 5 p.m. If you call at 5:01, he's not picking up the phone. And he doesn't care. He's like, I mean, he cares, but he's not going to get roped into any alibi, any bullshit. It's like, nope, talk to me tomorrow, you know? And that really worked for me because I really wanted your help. But number two, I sat in his office and I talked about an experience I had when I was young that had to do with, I grew up as an outsider in my mind, right? Whether that's true or not, it doesn't matter. But in my mind, I grew up in a family that had different last names. I was the only Turner. I was the only boy, really, in my immediate family. And a scenario that played out in the holidays was that envelopes with money were given out. Mm-hmm. And the majority, everyone in the family except me got X amount and I got less, right? So $50 and I got 20. Part of me says, man, you should be grateful for that $20, right? And so it was hard for me to understand, and this is something that you talk about a lot, the subconscious and the things that we do with our the neurochemistry and the neuroplasticity around like the belief system that you have and how it drives decisions. Mm. And I met with Dr. Rob and we were talking about how every decision I've ever made, if I had a choice between the $50 bill or the $20 bill, I was going to choose the 20. And I got, and then it unraveled a thought process around, holy shit, the places I worked for, the people. And if I got lucky enough, and I have dated some people who were really amazing, I found a way to screw it up because there's no way I can hold on to this $50 bill. It's too much for me, you know? And so here's what Dr. Rob did. Now, mind you, he hadn't asked me for anything. He just asked me to do the work. And I was leaving his office and he gives me an envelope. My assumption was it was an invoice, which I was happy to pay, right? Like, here's the thing. I was happy to pay it. I would have paid. It's kind of like the breathwork thing the other day where you were like, I'll pay whatever. Right. You know? And would have been happy to pay it. And I opened it up and inside it was a $50 bill. And like the amount of electrical energy that took place in my brain in that moment, there's something that happened. I mean, it is as clear as this microphone is right now. Like it is so embedded in my brain. And I've never been the same since. Like literally. Yeah. Now I had to do other stuff and I did some work with a sponsor in 12-step recovery. I did some trauma work and then I had to do affirmations and I did a lot of like subconscious work with headsets. But I will tell you, I am here to say, Dr. Rob, that like without that moment, I wouldn't be here. Like the other part of that story around starting over, before I called my friend, I was in a Whataburger parking lot with a pistol. Like having some understanding of neuroscience, this is the insanity. And I know you'll appreciate this. Literally like, well, if I drink a shake and I get some sugar on board, I can change my brain chemistry and maybe I won't pull the trigger. Like a desperately reaching for anything that would stop me. And I don't even know. I think I got a phone call from somebody interrupted. It was sort of a divine. It got me to think differently. And I went home that night, but I wouldn't be here. I would not be here. So
that's crazy. It's, I knew in that moment, because the $20 was huge. And I saw in that moment, which I had no plans to do, by the way, I saw that $20 lifestyle. And I saw that $50 lifestyle over here that you were never going to go. It's easy. We take the way out, learn behavioral measurement. We take what our caregivers think we're worth, because my worth is based on my parents and caregivers. And for whatever reason, I text my wife while we're in the office, just about to leave. And I said, bring 50 up an envelope. And she brought it in quietly so Jay couldn't see it. It was underneath some BS papers, blank, I think, I'm not sure. But when I gave it to you, I think right there and then I realized, and I'd have to say this, guys, I don't really give a shit, you know, about, you know, the beefing people up. I don't get into it. But right there and then I saw that you're going to change the world. Because when you stood above that chair, you walk different. You let it all out. You were the real Jason that was always meant to change the world. And to have a little 0.0001% to do with that, it makes me cry when I think about it. Because that's how easy it is, guys, to change somebody's life. There's a story. The guy's going to go to the Golden Gate Bridge and throw himself off. And he did. Killed himself. They fished him out. And when the police got there, he went back to the apartment to see, you know, were next of kin. But they found a letter on the bathroom table, kitchen table. And it said, I'm going to go to the Golden Gate Bridge and throw myself off unless somebody on the way smiles at me, says hi, or whatever communication. Whew. Let me ask you a question, guys, with what we just talked about. How many people have you walked by today heading to the Golden Gate Bridge? You see, we don't know. Yeah. We don't know. So having caveats of that that happened in that little office we were saying, bedroom, it was an upstairs bedroom, 40 real office, I guess, I don't know. Is that's what makes me live today. That's what makes me get up every morning. It's like, you know, and there's a billion Jasons out there that need to do this and get on board, because the transformation, we could sit here all day about that, man, but it's absolutely one of the biggest miracles I've ever seen.
Yeah. And I just so you know, like, this is why I'm committed to the process of helping others, and I want to be the best that I can be at it. Is like the idea that the ripple effect, right? Mm-hmm. It's like the watching someone take what they've gained from the experience of working with somebody, and then they go do it with somebody else and do it with somebody. It's like, that's a lot of impact. Yeah. Over, and so it's part of what drives the model here, as far as we're movement, breath work, but the narrative, the belief in oneself and being seen is like super, super powerful. And it's something that we don't take lightly at all, you know? And, you're with me on days, like, I just have to share this too. Like the story about the Golden Gate Bridge, is powerful. And you had a podcast, just so you know, the work that you're doing just on your social media, right? So you were either on a podcast, or I think it was a podcast, and you were interviewing somebody and you talked about complimenting someone's shoes.
Yeah.
And I literally did it that day. It was like, I heard the podcast and I went and I'm like, because I can get, Frank said something the other day, it's called fuck the noise, right? And and it's like, I can get so caught up in the noise, even with all the information and the practices and the, it's like, it's a never ending stream of distraction, right? Like, hey, just so when I'm out and about, it was like, I used the complimenting somebody, man, does that really help?
Yeah.
And I complimented someone's shoes the other day. And the one thing I have trouble with, I'm getting better at, is the smile. Like it almost hurts to smile, and that's sad to say, right? Yeah. It is, but that's just the reality for me. Casey Lassen makes fun of me all the time. Because what were we doing the other day? What was it the other day where you were like, we took that photo and you're like, God, dude, like, even, was it at High Rocks? We were taking a picture and I did like one of the bunny ears.
Yeah.
But like, so this is me. I'm the guy who does bunny ears to be funny in a video that's like, like, anyway, I don't want to make this about me. I'm really making it, I'm saying all this because it's for you. It's like you are still guiding light for me in the sense of how I want to be in the field, what I want to aspire to, the giving that you do. You talk about the Rob Kelly Foundation, but a lot of people don't understand how much you give, right? And I think it can be looked at as unbecoming to, like, for someone to share it and you wouldn't, but like, I just want people to know, like, you do a lot of pro bono work. You give away a lot of stuff. You're the kind of guy who will, like, literally give somebody a pretty fairly good chunk of change if you think it's going to help them and they're in need, and you don't expect it to come back, you know? Yeah. And that's an amazing attribute. And I just really wanted to make sure that I honor your presence in my life today with this conversation, because you do mean a lot to me. We just started getting more time together, which I'm super grateful for. Also, you know, moving ahead, like, what's down the road for you? Like, where's Dr. Rob headed? That's what I want to know.
Well, you know, we have 5 offices now around the world, which are home offices and nothing elaborate. My ending time within the industry will look like 100-bed rehab, stroke depression, stroke childhood trauma, where 50% of it, you can come off the street. It's not going to cost you anything. And 50% of that is going to be for profit. And it's kind of what I do now. It's like, you know, people pay a lot of money to come and see me. But as part of that, rather than taking it and shoving it in my bank account going, hey, look at me, like I used to do only a year ago, what I've started to do is I've started to funnel that off. So if I earn X amount of dollars there, then I'll take 50% and I'll funnel it back off to help people.
I love that.
But you'll never see me shaking hand of a waitress, giving her money, because I tip the charge of the meal. Because they work so hard. It's unbelievable. Yeah. I can't believe it. Back home in England, you get paid $15 an hour plus. That's why in our shop, everyone gets paid $15 an hour. They think it's crazy, you know, rather than just on your tips to get the tips as well. But yeah, it's and it's not something I do to make me feel better or them feel better. And not a dopamine release is pretty good in both of us when we do it. It's a call of duty. It's what I have to do. Why? I always say this at home. Why should we have, you know, we always carry 5,000 for workers and stuff around the house. But if you're in need and I've got this $5,000 in that safe and it's been there for 6 months, I don't get it, you know?
Yeah.
You've got to be helping people all the time.
I love that. A lot of people don't know either, I think. The tea shop is new for you. Tell me a little bit about...
Yeah, so 18 years ago when I came here, I had this crazy idea that one day, because I spent 14 years in Dallas and then I've been here for 2 years, San Antonio, I said, one day I'm going to open an English cuisine cafe shop and we're going to import all the food and all this stuff for English people and for Americans to try it. Because everyone who's been in the shop has been to England sometime or other. And then my sister came over about a year ago and she came to visit. Well, she hasn't seen how I live. In actual fact, the last time I saw her, I was homeless.
Oh, wow.
All them years ago, because we've been estranged because of my homelessness. So I've built what I have built here, and she comes to the house, and it's funny because there's a broken down house getting repaired about 2 minutes from me. And I pulled out and I pulled in front of it. And she was like, oh, this is amazing. You know, I'm glad. I said, we're just working on it. And then just before she got, I reversed the car and I went round into ours. It's nighttime. It's all up.
Yeah.
She's like, oh my God, the life you have, you know, because you deserve it. So I said to her a year ago, why don't you come over and live here and we'll start an English tea shop? 6 months ago, they came back, and 3 months ago, we opened.
Oh, that's awesome.
So the only thing I do there is wash dishes, clear tables. I'm a bus boy only. It takes me right down to my level and chat to people. You know, the conversation thing that I'm getting into now, that like you would kind of, here I am, fuck you. And if you get my... I love conversing with people in life. I used to hate people. Yeah. You know, I still do to a certain extent. But yeah, we're going to franchise that out over the next 18 months. We want one in every state if possible. And then the 100-bed unit. And then ride off into the sunset, really. Get a beach house or something. My wife's always wanted a beach house. And I'll always work. Don't get me wrong. I'll always take people under help. But it will be 100% pro bono.
I love that. Well,
even if you've got money, I just, you know. Like 25% of our work is pro bono. It might be a bit more some days, but... You know, to back that, guys, I'm not just saying that because 14 years ago, I was living in Dallas. I was working with people free of charge, and I wasn't earning any money, and he foreclosed on my house, and not one person helped me. Oh, sorry, one person sent $20.
Wow.
It kind of broke my heart a little bit. So then, you know, my marriage split up and I went to live at a 24-hour club, which is a homeless place, only about 9 years ago. And when I was in that homeless place, I met my wife. And that's where I turned everything down. But at the guys, 24-hour club, it's nice now, but it wasn't then. It's cockroaches on the floor, you know, 40 people lying on the floor and sleeping with little sleeping bags. And I used to drive a car stroke van. It was a Beetle car. Volkswagen, and it had big black ears on the top, okay, because it was pest control, and it had whiskers on the front, and it had a huge tail out the back.
Is that Truly Nolan?
Yeah, Truly Nolan. That was my car. And I always remember driving it. I got the job while I was in the 24-hour club, and I was so embarrassed at first. It's like, oh. But I didn't have a car, so I was grateful. But I'd park it around the corner so nobody had seen
it. Kind of hard to hide that, though.
I know. But I was still trying to... You know, that's not me. I'm kind of this today. And one day in the morning, I came out about 6 o'clock and I go around the corner so nobody would see me. The guys, I didn't know them, but they're all looking out the window. When I got to the car, there's a big block of cheese in front of the car.
Oh.
And I laughed and laughed and they laughed and laughed. And, you know, the rest is history. But I think I needed that because of the disillusion in the industry. I had to come out. I couldn't do it anymore. I went in a hospital about 8 or 9 years ago. I went into the Meadows. And I went for depression, suicide. This was 9 years ago, guys. 8 years ago, even. Maybe 7. I don't know. It wasn't that long. But nobody knew. They stuck me in there for 6 or 7 weeks. Because I, again, was everything was taken off me again, split up with a second wife, didn't think I was worthy. And in that time, I've come back with a vengeance. It's that don't care attitude, you know, I really, but it's kind of now I want to get more, I want to come over more professor type rather than loud, loud, loud. Loud, loud, loud was to get your attention, guys. If you've ever seen the past videos, how can I make my attention? Well, nobody's listening to me. The conversation's louder, yeah. Different. So get loud. And that's how I've been doing it. But now I'm settled and people know who I am. Yeah, this, and I'm sure you know, this is the real me, guys, because all that shouting and, you know, inspiring people and everything that I did, that wasn't me. That was for your benefit to try and track you in and get well. The me at home is pajamas on by four, these crazy big slippers that we've all bought, and in front of the TV, and we have dinner, and it's quiet, and I'm at peace. So now I try to transfer the unknown Rob into the known Rob. And I'll tell you something, I got to tell you, Jason. Every single person over the last 12 months said you're a bad person. I never used to connect with it. You know this. I never connect to anybody. You say one thing about me, I'm blocking you. It's just foolish, childish behavior that I'd not got rid of. So I went back and I did some more of the work on myself through a therapist. And yeah, here I am today. So franchise, big unit. And then I've just started another company, ProTech, as you know. We're going to build that into...
We love those guys.
Yeah, I know. They're amazing. So we're 50% partners, and we're going to build that into a $50 million company over the next 5 years.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for... There's a theme that's happened over the last couple of shows, which is that to look at you right now, right? Suit, the watch, the cars, and I get to see, you know, the other... Have so much going on. It's real easy to think like... Wow, super successful. And maybe, I don't think the first thought for most people when they come across somebody with your level of success is like, wonder how much struggle they had.
Yeah.
I wonder how much pain they've experienced. And like, I think it's important for people to know that what it takes, you know, it's like, you can definitely change your life pretty quick, but to go through homelessness, to face, you know, the car with the cheese and the ridicule and... I'd be willing to bet that not a lot of people would see what you're currently up to and the people that you get to work with and the, you know, the access that you have to certain people and think, oh, he was 7-8 years ago, he was suicidal or he was homeless or he cried himself to sleep on mold. You know what I mean? Like that part, I don't think a lot of people really feel comfortable enough to share. And so thank you for allowing people to get that side of you, because I think it's important.
I think today, I think it is. And I'm going to, this might be career suicide, I don't know, but I feel as if, I'm going to tell you something nobody else knows. 4 years ago, I relapsed.
Wow.
And I nearly died. And I was so full of shame. And it's like, I couldn't tell anybody, because if I told anybody, they might relapse and die. And all these people that followed me and stuff. But I quietly went away to treatment. And I came back again. Now, some people say, hey, you're carrying that. You're not telling the truth. The only reason why I did that, and I've never mentioned it, is one, it was 2 days, but it doesn't matter. And two, you know, why is he trying to teach when he's done that? Which I haven't forgotten anything I'd done, by the way. Mm-hmm. It's just that, you know, sooner or later, that's going to start coming out from me, you know, just being my authentic self. But it was a huge hit.
Yeah.
You know, I went into depression. And of course, my wife had no idea what to do. We couldn't call anybody up because everybody knew who I was in the industry. And it was just, it was horrendous. And for about a year after that, I backed off working with people and I stopped going on TV. And that's when the weight started to gain and gain and gain because I felt like an imposter just them short years ago.
Yeah.
But what I found is, you know, I wasn't doing my work and I'd not done my full trauma work. So when I come here and see what you guys are doing, it's like that is what's missing. You know, so like I said, come out of it. Where do I buy it? Give you my credit card. I thought he said 42,000. I'm like, there's no 4,200. I'm like, oh, whatever. You know, because I knew that was another missing part for me. So, yeah, just being honest, guys. You know, nobody knows that. The only my wife knows that. It was kept quiet and out the media, of course. But that's me, man. So if you see me today, you know, driving my flashy cars and wearing the watch and it's been a struggle, man. It's only recently, over the last 3 years, And I wasn't healed properly when I met you and some other people, you know, pulled away. So the last 12 months, maybe 9 months, I've really delved deep. But Yeah, nobody knows about that, guys. And I feel relieved telling you because I always want to tell somebody. I told my sponsor, of course, and my wife and my sister. But yeah, it's not all, you know, some days I get up and I'm so depressed I can't get out of bed, guys. Still today. Might be once a month, once every 6 months, but I get up and I start crying. And I think the last one was like 2 years ago. And my wife cancels my date. And I just need to spend some time with me because I'm so depressed at that. I don't know, it's lack of serotonin or all the hits I still get. I got two haters out there, by the way. It's not bad, just I got millions of people out there that love me. You know, I'm as real as can be. I just wait to pull that over. And I don't know why, but I did. But it's no big deal now, of course, because years and years ago. But it was for me at the time because I was at kind of at my peak working with people. And then we happened and we had to let the patients go. And eventually we closed the Dallas office. We had medical building, Highland Park. We closed that down and we moved here and it took like a few weeks before I'd get back. And, you know, my sponsor would say, you've not lost everything, you know, you still, and I believe that. So if you're having a setback, guys, it's probably one of the best things you've done. I know my last relapse was the best thing I've done because I thought I knew everything, Jason. I thought I'm the king. I'm the one you come to. If you don't come to me, if you don't do my program, you're going to relapse.
Yeah.
If you don't do my program, da, da, da. And I think it was God pulling me down a peg because it came out of the blue, literally in seconds, saying, hey, calm down, buddy. You know, I've given you this, and you know about John's story. I've given you this to go out and help people, and you're getting too big for your boots. I remember coming up to the doctors one day, the TV program, and I'd done about six of them. And in the end, because I was so popular, they sent a private jet for us and a chauffeur we got when we got there. I came off stage, and I was that hyped with myself, you know, look at me. And I said to Janet, where's my chauffeur and where's my plane? And she slapped me. I was more gobsmacked than any. It's like she's never raised a finger to anybody. And she said to me, if I ever hear that egoistic side of Rob again, we're done.
Wow.
Yeah. So that, you know, we go off, guys. We go off in certain directions. It's not wrong to do that. If you find yourself doing that, don't think anything of your worth. You get back on the horse and you go out what God wants you to do. And that's help people. That's all he wants me to do. And by that, he blesses me with certain things.
I love that you talked about, you know, it doesn't mean that I don't have the information that I have or learned what I learned. A lot of the patients that we get the privilege to work with are surprised to hear, like, there's a reframe mm-hmm. of a setback. Let's call it a relapse. Mm-hmm. So, well, I usually will ask them, I'll start with, like, okay, so what's your experience been? Well, last year you were using daily? Okay. Mm. And this year, how many times have you used? Well, three. But it just happened. So they're like in this, you know, they're crushed and they're feeling. Yeah. And it sounds like you're making progress.
Yeah.
It's, you know, and obviously there's things to look at if, you know, you're using chemicals and you're trying to be abstinent, but doesn't mean that when you look at the track record, it's like I'm doing better than I had been and I still have work to do. And,
people don't see that because of the shame. And I go back to AA and everyone's like, you know, if I went back to AA, sorry, for the first chip, most of them would go, oh, thank God for that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I've got more time than him now. And all the bullshit you hear, you know, in certain rooms. But I think by, like you said, reframe it, re-dialogue it, my perspective of what was happening, I should have taken care of myself. I should have been doing certain things. I don't need to isolate as an alcoholic and addict. And that taught me to do that. But only, I could say, about 9 months ago, I'm like, you know something? I need to be more approachable and I need to make an effort. I need to go to Jason's gym. I need to experience. I need to go to the park with my dogs. I need to get out there again because it's very, once you get the and you're only going to say this one guy, the amount of money that I have earned over the past 9 years, 90% of the people will go, okay, bye, I'm out. I never have to work again as long as I can. I'll probably buy an island, to be honest, with the money I've earned. But it's not about the money because I always thought that money would make me happy. So I'm in Dallas. I live in a beautiful house, Highland Park. I have half a floor of a medical building. It's cost about 20 grand a month. I have a brand new 911 Porsche. I've got a brand new shoe. I had a Rolex watch. I had Louis Vuitton shoes on. I mean, I had everything that everybody wants. I was adored by it. And I drove to work in this morning and I was the most depressed, miserable person in the world.
Yeah.
Driving away from the Porsche dealership, I'm like, Maybe try the 938. I see it was never good enough. I was never blonde enough, tall enough, thin enough, or rich enough. And today, I have enough.
Yeah.
And it's a great headspace to be in. And I just want other people to get it before they're 62.
Yeah.
You know, even though I don't feel 62, you know, I feel like 30 with everything I'm doing now for myself. But yeah, man, that's life, you know. But don't ever allow anybody to determine who you are, you know, because it's not true.
There's a theme, two things that are sticking out to me right now. The amount of clarity that comes from pain and struggle, right? Oftentimes, I mean, we live in a society where you just turn on any marketing, social platform, TV, everything is about getting comfortable. Yeah. Right? It's hard to sell discomfort.
Yeah.
You know? And there's really isn't anything that comes from comfort that benefits.
Yes.
Right. And the last couple of conversations I've had have been super powerful. This has been absolutely an incredible experience for me to have this conversation and the risk that you took and the vulnerability. But the description of the pain brings the clarity. Oh, this is what I have to do. And it's not as a result of driving off the lot with a Porsche. It's as a result of falling, right? It's as a result of being humiliated or feeling shameful or all of those things. And the second theme that I've been hearing lately, which is I'm attracted to at this stage of my life, is the power of a really solid relationship with a woman, right?
Yeah.
Like that you're... Frank spoke about it, getting through his ordeal. You just talked about like keeping you on track. Like, hey, dude, like I'll slap the shit out of you if you, you know, and those two things are standing out to me. And I'm really appreciative that you spoke about them because I think they're important for people to hear. And there's other components of life. But right now what I'm focused on is, man, the clarity from pain. Mm-hmm. And it's certainly been true in my life, helping me to bring this place to fruition. So thank you.
Of course, pleasure. And I feel, you know, feel so connected to you. You know, that's why I'm here telling everything out open. Just let everything go, man, because I think that's the way to live life. Don't be shameful. Don't be guilty. Don't live in that shadow. Don't isolate. You know, just get out there. God, you have a niche in life. Everyone has a niche in life. Find that niche and then go forward despite what anybody says. You know, listen to the gut feeling or feel the gut feeling. It's a real thing. You know, your gut feeling's always right. My gut feeling was to create an empire and change the world. And I've kind of done that, which is brilliant. Don't get me wrong. But I'm at peace today, man.
I love that for you. I really do. And I love you, my friend. So thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for this.
Thank you for connecting with us on today's episode of the Emotion Podcast, where we discuss all things mental health. Connect every week as we explore incredibly intimate stories of persistence and hope, delve into mental health education, and explore valuable resources. Available on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And visit emotionwellness.com for more information.